You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 13 November. U.S. inflation due 3:30 our time. Previous 2.4%, expected for October 2.6%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Jimmy Moyoha. Bitcorp and AVI both had, well, they AGM and Capital Markets Day's updates, but both made comments around consumers who are still under pressure. Premier Group CEO, we got results, strong operational leverage, debt looking down, a good set of numbers. And then Shlomo Mokgosi, he's a Chief Partnership Officer at Yes, Youth Unemployment. We saw unemployment data yesterday. It did go down 1.4%, but the crisis remains in the youth. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. DStv has lost 1 million premium, compact and compact plus subscribers in 4 years. This is MultiChoice finally admits globally pay TV growth has plateaued. Business Day, new short-term rental rules could dampen demand for buy-to-let properties. New restrictions mean property owners and investors may not be able to rely on the profitability of short-term rentals. This is Hello Airbnb. Morning markets. US was red. S&P down 0.3%. NASDAQ off 0.2%. The East is mostly red. Sydney's up a couple of points, 0.04%. Tokyo down 1.1%. Hong Kong off 0.6%. And Tencent 1.3% down. Commodities also mostly red. Gold, $2,614 an ounce. Brent is green at $72.19. PGM's red. Platinum, $9.59. Palladium, $9.57. Rand, $18.08. Bitcoin, $87,500. Top 40 opening call, red open, 170 points or 0.2% lower.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Jimmy Moyoha, independent analyst. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning time. Bitcorp and AVI, these weren't traditional updates. These were capital market days and AGM updates and the like. Two things stood out for me. Bitcorp said food inflation has all but disappeared. Good news in that regard. But they also said weak consumer demand. And AVI said domestic macro environment remained challenging despite optimism created by the government of national unity. I suppose it makes sense. It's a wake-up call, but we haven't all suddenly, as consumers, gotten richer in the last 6 months. Yes, we've got power. Yes, interest rates are down 0.25%. It's still tough being a consumer out there.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Obviously, both updates were for a four-month period, so it is to be taken into account that this could be a situation that changes quite quickly. But what I found interesting as well, alongside what you mentioned, is the fact that if you look at the numbers in greater detail, from Bitcorp's perspective, 90% of their revenues now come from offshore markets outside of South Africa. And AVI, a lot of the AVI business is still in South Africa. And for me, what was telling about that was both companies experienced the same kind of consumer outlook, whether you're looking internally into the borders of South Africa or externally around the world, which suggests that consumers everywhere are feeling the punch, or the pinch rather, not just consumers in South Africa. And then you look at the revenue growth. And yeah, there was modest growth, about 10% in the case of Bitcorp, about 3.5 to 4% in the case of AVI. But that also says to me that the companies that have their revenues based outside of South Africa might weathering some of these consumer-led macro storms a little bit better, because you can diversify into other regions. Not to say that the South African consumer is under more pressure than other consumers, but it does give you a bit more freedom in the case of your revenues when one of the markets is slowing down. I mean, in Bitcorp's case, they were actually quite pleased with what was happening in South Africa.
I take your point. It gives you that bit of diversification. But it also, I mean, certainly we've seen locally, I mean, clothing retailers have been in an absolute tear in anticipation of consumer strength. And it does suggest this is going to take a bit longer. And certainly, I think it also suggests that maybe globally stock markets are quite well priced. If you think, I mean, S&P through 6,000 for the first time last week.
Definitely. When you look at the markets, they're definitely reflective of some of the macro factors being taken into account within each region. I mean, you look at what's happening in China, you look at the Chinese consumer and the state of the Chinese consumer, and you can definitely see the sentiment that filters through when markets or investors look at the Chinese market. Similarly to South Africa, exactly the same. As you mentioned earlier, we have electricity, we have some of the things sorted out, but we also do still have our own challenges that persist. And on the US side of it, the US economy has been showing signs of strength. The US consumer has been resilient in the face of everything that has gone through over the last couple of years, albeit there was that big stimulus package that the US put out for their consumers that we can't ignore, which obviously has clearly proven its worth in the long run. So different factors and different conditions around the world, and they are evident in how investors might be seeing those particular markets. Everybody anticipated a recovery and a rebound at a certain point that hasn't yet taken place. And it's now to say, when we start to see those numbers come through, then maybe markets will start to move a bit more freely in those spaces.
Absolutely. And it's a process. It's never an event. And I think sometimes we get impatient. We forget that it's a process. Jimmy Muyaha, independent analyst, appreciate the early morning time. Our question today, LinkedIn and Twitter, is about that. As a consumer, we are all consumers out there, how's your budget going? Is it tough? Is it getting better? Is it much better? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Kobus Gertenbach. He's CEO at Premier Group. Results 6 months ending September saw revenue up 3.7%. HEPS up 32.4%. No dividend. Company policy is dividend at the year end only. Kobus, appreciate the time. A really strong leverage impact there. You talk around efficiencies and like within the group that really helped expand margins and profitability. Was this one-off? Was this something that is sort of within the group structure and you're always looking to just be better at what you do?
Yes, Simon, thank you for the opportunity. You know, we've been investing over 6 billion rand in our facilities over the last 13 years, and it's been a constant drive of us to constantly get our factories and our bakeries and our malls and everything to run as good with efficiencies as we possibly can, and combine that with logistics and get our product out there in the most efficient way. And I think that, you know, in this current period, we just continued to reap the benefit of work that we've put in over the years. And it's not something you drive overnight. It really is something that builds momentum and that you chip away at over time.
And how were input costs for the period under review?
It's very difficult in a South African context to really keep your cost base from growing less than 8%. You know, it's just hard. You've got administrative prices. We do have higher fuel prices than we had this time last year.
Yep.
You've got wage increases that also come through. And so at the end of the day, you know, you have to constantly do things more efficiently if you want to keep your cost base under control.
And load shedding, I'm thinking this was March, so your period starts, so you would have had a couple of weeks at the beginning of March and then no load shedding. That must help regardless.
Look, it takes a huge burden off the operations. You know, to run a manufacturing site and get switched off 2-3 times a day and then have to start up again, or to run off alternative power sources, burning fossil fuels, is very a perilous way to continue to run your operations. And so it really has just taken a lot of pressure off our operational side, where one can then focus all your attention on being as efficient as you can.
Millbake, the one division, really came through very, very strong in the period under review. Strong performance in terms of revenue, but also in terms of EBITDA growth.
Yes, I think that, you know, the business first and foremost benefited from slightly lower wheat prices globally, and combined with a slightly stronger rand, especially following the GNU formation, one set with a little bit of deflationary pressure there. It enabled us to use some of that and offset some of these other cost prices as well, over and above the efficiency gains that we had across our organization. And, you know, I think that our ability to maintain pricing on bread and on cake flour sat for the consumers now for quite a considerable number of months, is doing our best to try and help out with the difficult pressure that the consumer is under in South Africa and in the other neighboring countries as well.
Yeah, I take your point. Your groceries and international, there's a fair bit sitting in that division. Revenue was a bit higher, but EBITDA came under pressure. What were the challenges in that division?
Our sweets business trading under Manhattan and Mr. Sweet did really well. And so did our personal care business under the Lillet's and Dove brands. And we're very satisfied with the performance of those two businesses. It's really a matter of very, very adverse macroeconomic conditions in Mozambique that pulled our Mozambican operation down. You know, they're not loss-making, but they're certainly far below what they made in the first half of last year and also below where their potential lies. And with the recent elections not having gone down totally peacefully, you know, we continue to see some adverse impacts on that business. And I think it will take a bit of time and hopefully a peaceful settlement to the impasse around the elections to really settle the economy down and start it to get going again.
How big is Mozambique in Premier Group's life?
For this 6 month period, it's less than 1% of our profit contribution.
Operating profit margin up by 110 basis points, 9.7%, a chunky increase in that regard. Have you got more scope to move that store higher, perhaps?
Yes, I think that the efficiencies that we've gained that lifted our EBITDA then gives you further expansion of margins through your operating profit line as our depreciation line is fairly flat on prior year. I think, you know, we're fairly confident that we can continue to sustain that same performance through the second half of our year towards our year end in 31 March.
Gold keys, you took a 30% stake. We chatted about it 6 months ago. That is effective from June of the year. So it's in the numbers. It's a small stake. It's only 30%. It is rice distributor in KZN. How's that going at this point? Certainly there's been some price surging almost in a sense in rice anecdotally.
Yes. So once had huge price surges in rice globally when the Indian market or the Indian government put a ban on the export of Indian rice. That was lifted about 6 weeks ago or 2 months ago. And it's culminated in quite a big deflationary pressure now coming through in rice. So we're actually going to see rice prices for the first time in my life almost approaching the price of super maize meal, which is going to be a very interesting dynamic over the coming months, especially given that our maize harvest was a bit under pressure and we had to export quite a lot in order to assist with our neighboring countries. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic in terms of substitution going forward.
Yeah, I take your point. And then a last question, debt coming down, balance sheet looking strong. Is this a balance sheet that you're comfortable with or has you perhaps got scope for, I don't know, maybe some acquisitions off the balance sheet or perhaps paying debt even faster?
Look, we've managed to bring our gearing levels down to about 1x our EBITDA, which is a very, in my view, just an efficient capital structure. Mm-hmm. It certainly isn't putting any strain on us. And we very recently managed to refinance all our debt facilities at extremely favorable rates in the South African market. So I think the banks have taken a similar view in terms of the risk profile. And so we've got quite substantial unutilized facilities available to us. And, you know, our organic cash flow is quite strong. So we certainly would be on the lookout for more opportunities such as the Gold Keys transaction that we've concluded earlier.
We'll leave it there. That's Kobus Hoogenbach, Premier Group CEO. Appreciate the time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
He's Chief Partnership Officer of the Youth Employment Service, better known perhaps as Yes. Cholo, appreciate the time today. We got South Africa unemployment data out Tuesday morning, Q3. It dropped 1.4% from 33.5% to 32.1%. Going in the right direction, still a crisis. But what really stood out for me was a chart put out by Stats SA looking at youth unemployment, which is the 15 to 34. That stands at, what, 45.5% compared to 22.5% for over 34. We have a crisis of unimaginable proportion in youth unemployment.
Yes, we do. And if you look at the age group 15 to 24, then you see that unemployment in that group is actually 60%. So definitely unemployment in South Africa is characteristic of young people. And it's because, obviously, they face some sort of bias in the labor market. They don't have the experience that they need. They don't have the qualifications sometimes. And also, they don't have the networks. And there's quite a lot of evidence that shows that a lot of jobs are secured through networks. So if you are young and you sometimes can be the right person for the job, it's just much more difficult for you to get into that job.
I want to delve into some of that. I'm going to assume as well that if we break it down by race and gender, it probably skews even worse for black and or female.
Yeah, so you are least likely to have a job in South Africa if you're a black African woman and you are young. And if you look at white women, the unemployment rate for white women is 7.7%. But for black women, the official unemployment rate is 38%. But if you look at young black women, it's north of 70%.
Terrifying numbers. You mentioned no experience, and that is the classic one. You need a job. You want someone just out of university but must have experience. Is that something that YES tries to address in terms of getting some experience, even if it's just a couple of months as an intern or something?
Yes. So in fact, YES was created exactly to address what is called the experience trap, which is that no one can give you that job until you have some experience. So someone has to take the risk to give you that first job. And so YES was created out of a partnership between business and government where they agreed that we have to find a way to give an incentive for business owners to give young people that first job. And I think evidence shows that once you have at least 1 year of experience, you're significantly more likely to get another job than if you don't have any experience at all. So through YES, we have about 1,700 companies that place about 40,000 young people a year in 12-month full-time jobs that are paid not less than minimum wage. And obviously, to get into that program, 100% of them coming in are unemployed, because you have to be unemployed to get into a YES program. But we find that within a year of coming out, 45% of them get employment, and about 15% also go into some kind of entrepreneurship, because there's also evidence that shows that you're more likely to make a go of an entrepreneurship idea if you are yourself employed, because you have access to the networks, and sometimes that salary can be just what you need to get something going. So it's not only about getting a job, but also having a job also gives you a better chance, especially if you're young, of being able to make a go of being an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. It makes perfect sense, as you say. And we were talking experience there. You've been alluding to network, also hugely important. Those 40,000 unemployed people who come in every year, they don't have a network in the corporate business world. A year, and they're not going to be C-suite, of course not in their first year, but they're still going to get a network of other people who are working and can help them find and further careers.
Correct. Because, you know, when you're in a job, you don't only interact with your colleagues, but also with suppliers, with customers. You're out there in the world. And one of the difficulties about being unemployed is that you're so isolated from economic activity. And it's very easy to fall into the trap of long-term unemployment. But once you're in a job, even if, you know, the company that is hosting you for that year doesn't end up absorbing you, you find that you are more likely to get a job elsewhere because of the fact that you had that experience and that network. For example, you know, in the YES program, the ones after the 12 month with YES, 57% of them that find a job from a company that didn't host them. So a totally different organization.
Oh, wow.
So, which is quite an interesting statistic, because it shows that one, you know, your 1 year of experience actually does make you more employable. And part of that is attributable to the fact that you've got a better CV and a reference letter. And part of it is attributable to the fact that you also got a network that you may have used during that year to find yourself a job.
Are we seeing, I mean, the 40,000 a year, it's a big number. It's an absolutely giant number. But of course, the numbers that we're looking at in terms of unemployment, it's almost a drop in the ocean. Is it working? Is it, I mean, chipping away? The numbers say it certainly is. But I'm almost thinking of like a leverage effect. If I'm one of those 40,000, perhaps when I'm looking to employ someone, I'm more happy to take someone perhaps without experience, perhaps without a network, because I was once there.
Yeah, I mean, we see it as a snowball effect. Every person that goes into the economy and gets employed, a percentage of them actually end up being, you know, they're not just a person being employed, but they're adding value to the economy.
Yeah.
Their skills are creating growth, they're creating more employment. And so for us at YES, we try to empower the youth that are with us as much as possible so that they can become game changers in the economy. So we do curate the kind of jobs that they do. We try and get them into jobs that actually make a difference for the economy, that are needed in the economy. And so there's a multiplier effect coming out of their employment. But also, you know, the economy has been static for a long time, and there's actually no jobs, you know, being created in the, I think at some point in 2022 to 2023, we had net 150,000 jobs created for young people in total in the economy. And so if you are adding 40,000 out of that 150,000, it's making a huge difference. Ultimately, in the long term, what is going to fix unemployment is to get the economy going. There are signs that things are moving in the right direction. I think obviously employment is a bit of a lag.
Yeah.
So investment decisions are made and then employment follows after that. But there are signs that there's a bit of a turnaround in the economy. And so we hope that the numbers generally of unemployment are going to go down. But ultimately, you know, there will always be a disadvantage to young people to getting into the labor market. So we don't think there will ever be a reason to remove programs that support young people getting into the economy, even if we manage to bring the overall unemployment rate down.
Yeah, we need GDP growth 3-5%, but I take your point. Even with that, young people don't have experience. They don't have networks. That is the big stumbling block, even with a growing economy. We'll leave it there. That's Solomon Khotsi, Chief Partnership Officer at the Youth Employment Service. Really appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Petley Radin, who's yesterday. Vodacom results currency woes hurting this time out of Egypt. We also chatted MTN. They've, of course, also got currency woes, most notably out of Nigeria. We asked you, is there value in local telcos? Almost two-thirds said you don't like either. You think there is no value. Just less than 20% each said you were preferring to MTN. The rest split between liking Vodacom or both. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, pre-owned tech.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.